Restaurant Unstoppable, episode 747 with Ari Wineswag. We're talking about anarchy in business.
You know, I just basically thought, okay, if you tell people what to do and then they're going to do the right thing and leave them alone. And what I learned is you still need good leadership. It's just you can come at leadership in a non-hierarchical, non-judgmental way where you're still treating the other person as your equal.
Are you ready for it factors, success stories, failures, and bombs of restaurant industry knowledge? Then, join Eric Cacciatore and today's incredible guest as they share what it takes to become unstoppable.
Whether you want to accept it or not, more and more guests would rather text instead of speaking over the phone. Well, if you don't believe me, then ask the 9 out of 10 customers who want to text a business or the 80% of customers who want contactless curbside pickup. Here's the kicker. Only half of the businesses in America are text capable. I know it's crazy. So right now, set up a business texting line and immediately get an advantage over your competition. No cost, no contract, no reason not to get started. Head to restaurantunstoppable.com/podium and get Podium's starter version free. That's restaurantunstoppable.com/podium. What are you doing right now? I'll tell you what you're doing if you're in the market for a new POS. You're headed to toasttab.com/unstoppable to set up your own demo, and you're going to find out why it's the most recommended POS on the show by a landslide. Guys, if you use my link, not only will you get the incentives that Toast is offering you by using the link, I'll also share my commission with you. I'll split my commission with you 50-50 after taxes. That's about $2,000. So I'll send you a check for $1,000 to say thank you and to help support you during these weird times. Again, head over to toasttab.com/unstoppable. What is going on, Unstoppables? We have another great episode for you today. Ari Wineswag from Zingerman's and the Zingerman's family or community of business is joining us for a second time in a month. How lucky can you get, right? So we first had him on to talk about visioning. I think he does visioning really well. I think he communicates how to vision really well, as good as anybody out there, if not the best at explaining how to do that. So we had him on the show a few weeks ago to dive into what makes a vision of greatness. And we love Ari and his perspectives and his uniqueness. One of those unique perspectives is his take on anarchy. I mean, all of his books, not all of his books, but his series of books, A Lapsed Anarchist Approach to Fill in the Blank. You know, it's a build a great business, become a better leader, leading oneself, beliefs in business. I'll start with that A Lapsed Anarchist Approach too. But the more he reflects on his younger years studying anarchy, the more he's starting to realize that maybe he isn't quite as lapsed as he thought he was. And today, really what we're doing is looking at what is anarchy and how does anarchy fit into business? What's anarchy's role in business? And at first, I feel like you hear the word anarchy and immediately you think of chaos, no order, buildings burning, people just being maniacs. I think that's the mental picture we build when we hear that word anarchy. But the truth is, my translation of how he sees anarchy and how he interprets anarchy is this idea that anarchy is human nature. Anarchy is that there are anarchists or people that believe we should lean into human nature and discover more about human nature and try to coexist with our nature instead of using hierarchy, systems, processes, overstructuring things to create order, because that's not necessarily where we thrive. Maybe that's where we're the most productive, but that's not where we're the happiest. I don't know. I think it's worth looking into. The more I learn, the more I listen to all these successful restaurateurs around the country, the more I realize that business is all about relationships, and relationships is all about just understanding people, having empathy and caring and giving. The more you understand human nature, the more you understand how we are and why we are the way we are, then I feel like the better your chances of being successful in business are. So that's why I really love this idea of leaning into human nature and doing more discovery about who we are, why we are, and how we got to where we are today over millions of years. So I feel like this conversation is kind of like setting us up for more deeper conversation in the future regarding human nature and what we can learn about human nature and what we can and how we can leverage these lessons in business. So that's the intro. There you go. I hope you guys enjoyed today's chat. I'll talk to you again in the closing thoughts. And with excitement, allow me to welcome back on the show for a third time, and I couldn't be more psyched, Ari Weinswag. Ari, my man, you know what's coming. Are you feeling unstoppable today?
Eric, when I'm near you, I am always unstoppable.
Yes, sir. That's what I love to hear. So Ari, I mean, I don't know if he needs an introduction. He's been on the show so many times, but started at Zingerman's 1985, has scaled it into
1982.
Thank you.
And don't take away 3 years.
You've scaled it into something pretty incredible. Just paint the picture for us real quick. What Zingerman's, the family of, or the community of business consists of?
Well, today, before the pandemic, we had about 700 employees. Now I think we have about 550. Depending how you count, we have like 11 businesses all here in the Ann Arbor area. We only do each business once. So we have everything from the deli, which we've expanded 3 times. So it's much bigger than its original 1300 square foot footprint, to Zing Train, our training business, which is kind of what I'm doing today, to an event space on a farm, renovated space where it's very difficult to do business during a pandemic. Turns out we have a food tour business where it's impossible to do business during a pandemic. And then we have a bakery, creamery, candy business, coffee roasting, a little Korean restaurant. Mail order is our biggest business. And then where I'm sitting right now is Zingerman's Roadhouse, which is a sit-down restaurant that not during a pandemic would have near about 180 seats.
Yeah, and I don't think you mentioned your books in that list of things you got going on.
Books, and then not dealing with all that, I also work on coming up with books. So I've written 4 in the leadership series, plus a book on service, a book on bacon, a book on food
in
general, and a couple pamphlets, and I got a new pamphlet coming out in a few weeks on humility.
Ooh, nice. I can't wait to pick up that one.
Which I was proofing earlier this morning.
So you're up to, I think it's a total of 4 of your Lapsed Anarchist Approach books. And you group these into kind of general topics: building a great business, becoming a better leader, leading oneself, and and beliefs in business. I'm pretty sure this is in that last one, right? Beliefs in business.
Yep. It shows up in all of them, but there's one essay that we're referencing today is in part 4, correct?
Yes, what I believe about anarchy or anarchism in business, and I cannot wait to get into that. I want to make sure you guys know about the first recording I did with Ari. He's episode 91. Head over to restaurantunstoppable.com/91. And we just recorded an episode on visioning. If you want to check out that episode, I think that's 744. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'll make sure to link to them in the show notes. Right now, I just want to get into that success quote or mantra. So how do you want to start this sucker off, Ari?
How do you want to start it off? We got a workbook.
Success quotes or mantras, brother. That's how we get every episode
success
going.
Quotes.
I know you got some quotes in there. I know you're...
You got it. Let me get to the right page and I'll get you a quote.
Yeah, brother.
Because this is the quote that sort of made me... So I studied the anarchists in school at U of M, at University of Michigan. I liked it, but then it didn't seem like it had application. So I started studying other leadership stuff. And then fast forward, the story is 20 something years later, I got asked to speak at the Jewish Studies Department, and Deborah Dash Moore, who was the head of the department, humorously titled the talk Rye Bread and Anarchism, because she knew I had studied the anarchists and I had just written this long essay on the history of Jewish rye bread, and I thought it was cute. So we ran with it. But then when I got like 3 months out before the talk, I was like, shit, I haven't looked at these books in 20 years, man. I'm going to look like an idiot because these people actually study the anarchists and I'm out of touch. So I got all my old books out and I started to reread them, and it really blew my mind for 2 reasons. One, because I came to realize that unconsciously Paul, my partner, and I had created a lot of this stuff without calling it that. we were actually doing it. And then it really blew my mind because I realized how much of what people like Emma Goldman were going to jail for 100 and something years ago was now called progressive business and being talked about in the Harvard Business Review or Wharton or University of Michigan Business School. So stuff like respecting everybody, self-organizing, work teams, engagement, like all that stuff, which are now big, big business buzzwords, basically are embedded in what a lot of the anarchists, at least the ones I'm interested in, were talking about in 1900. Ready for the quote?
Are you building suspense right now? Okay, you got the quote locked and loaded. Okay, I got it.
I got it. Locked in. I don't like gun metaphors. But anyway, she wrote this about anarchism in 1910. But when I read it, I was like, this is about how we're trying to work. Anarchism is in our case, our work is the freest possible expression of all the latent powers of the individual, which is only possible in a state of society where man is free to choose the mode of work, the conditions of work, and the freedom to work, one to whom the making of a table, the building of a house, or the tilling of the soil is what the painting is to the artist and the discovery to the scientist, the result of inspiration, of intense longing, and deep interest in work as the creative force. So I know it's hard to parse all that without looking at it, but the key points are just that you can create an organization where people take prepping onions or clearing tables or cooking the line or working the front door with the same passion that an artist brings to their creation, or a scientist who's doing work on a coronavirus vaccine right now brings to their work. And that it's all about creating a meaningful workplace where the people who work there feel honored and engaged with what they're doing.
I love it. I love it, man. Great way to get this thing started. And I'm sure we're going to dissect that as we go, but you already kind of alluded your romance, your history with anarchism, discovering it as a student in college and really starting to get lost in the library, really just dissecting the philosophy behind anarchy. Bring us to that time and really kind of, what was it? What was the draw? Why were you so drawn to anarchy?
Well, I generally use the term anarchism, not anarchy, although there kind of can be changed because people perceive anarchy as chaos, which is the opposite of what this is. So anarchism is, if you go to page 4 in that workbook, it's at the top. It's a way of life, not a political program. And so why was I drawn to it then? I needed to study something. I like obscure, interesting people. In hindsight, I have lived, even though I know it seems weird because I own this business, but I feel on the periphery. I'm an introvert who feels uncomfortable most of the time that I'm not alone. And I was drawn to the interest in creativity, to honoring everybody as a unique individual, to not having things legislated from the top down or imposed on people, because I felt like stuff had been imposed on me growing up. I'm sure most of you could relate. To getting out of social norms and trying to live in a way that was true to what I believed in and that was supportive of the community and the group around me. So it wasn't just about like selfishness. Like I read Ayn Rand when I was in high school too, but that's more about like me. This is more about how do I honor me while still honoring you all at the same time, and that they can go together. So that's a lot of what drew me to it then. And then also, in hindsight, a lot of their stuff, and to this day, I mean, it was very creative. So it wasn't just intellectually interesting. It was actually presented on these really beautifully designed pamphlets and stuff. And I liked that. And in hindsight, having now written a lot about art, I realized that was telling.
Yeah. So at what point did you realize that anarchy wasn't mayhem? And I think that's, when I first hear the word anarchy or anarchism, right.
Well,
I immediately
it's just
think
not.
That.
It's not. I mean, it's just, I don't know. When did you realize that really awesome, traditionally made, hand-done artisan food wasn't just somebody gouging and charging exorbitant prices? The world, the whole book about beliefs is that we all have beliefs and people are changing their beliefs. People have beliefs. They don't even know them. Right. So the belief that anarchism is about chaos is just sort of like the same belief that all Muslims are terrorists. I mean, it's just a commonly perpetuated belief that we hear it enough. We don't question it. Why should we question it? And we just run with it. you know.
Got you. So what was going on? Because I know in your journey, you were studying anarchy or anarchism. You were really drawn to it. And then when you started to become a manager, you were running restaurants, there was something that, that was going on inside you that said, hey, maybe if I'm going to be a manager, I'm not cut out for all this anarchy stuff. Like, what was going on? What was the dialogue?
Oh, just like I tried leaving everybody alone, which probably everybody on this call has done, in the belief they would do the right thing. It didn't really work. And then I just sort of, that's where the idea of lapsed anarchist came from, is because I said for years that I still believed in it, but I didn't practice. The Catholics get this generally better than others. But I, you know, so I still liked it, but it didn't seem like it was working in practice. And like I said, then when I was going to speak at Jewish Studies, which is around the time I was working on part one of the business book, so like a decade ago, that's when I had this experience of rereading the material that I hadn't looked at in 20 years and being shocked at how parallel it was to all these leadership books that I've been studying. And, you know, there's stuff that I came across that just talked all about how it's not, you know, organization's not a bad thing. It's just, it's a good thing. The key is that the people who are being organized participate in the organization, that it's not some boss who retreats to the back room and tells everybody what to do.
Okay. So we're starting to get into the nitty gritty of how it works. Cause that was my follow-up question. Cause I guess what I'm curious about is, what were you doing back when you were a young green manager leader and you were trying to implement these theories, these philosophies? What was going on that was not making it work? Why wasn't it sticking? What was missing in your early attempts?
Well, I didn't know what I was doing.
What were you doing? Paint that picture for us.
Well, I mean, if you're, everybody on this call's been there, like, you're, it's the first time you're managing people. It's like you watched basketball on TV. Now they gave you the ball. Like, you don't know what the fuck to do. You know, it's one thing to watch the other guy and critique him, but it's something else when you're the one with the ball and trying to figure out what to do. So, you know, I had some people that were coaching me that were working there that had been there longer that were good. One of them is still my business partner. Two of them are still my business partners all these years later. But, you know, I just basically thought, okay, if you tell people what to do and then they're going to do the right thing and leave them alone. And what I learned is you still need good leadership. It's just you can come at leadership in a non-hierarchical, non-judgmental way where you're still treating the other person as your equal, but you're being firm with them and holding them accountable like an intelligent adult and not like a, you know, 8-year-old that you missed. I would suggest 8-year-olds can get treated like intelligent adults too. But you're not holding them accountable in a way that's more demeaning in the way that a typical business setting might do, you know, shut up and do what I tell you. Which, yeah, I don't think anybody on this call likes, or they wouldn't be on here. And I definitely don't like.
Yeah. So, I mean, what's going through my mind listening to you say this is just the idea that there needs to be, you need to strike a balance, right? You need to lean into human nature, but at the same time, even cultures across every human being has a culture, right? Whether that's, you know, like the religious culture or the regional culture or whatever, we need some rules, some guidance, some core values, some idea of what's right, what's wrong, and an idea of
these are core values. Yeah. That's the point. It's just that you're not ordering people to do things. You're asking them, and in the business world, it's easier because if they don't want to do them, I can still respect them, and then I'm not being flip, but and not in 10 minutes, but I can ask them to leave if they have different beliefs or values, right? So it's no different than a relationship. I mean, if you're in a relationship with another human and they continue to behave in ways that are not aligned with what the two of you have agreed upon, it doesn't mean they're a bad person, but you're probably not going to stay in the relationship. And you can do that in a respectful, dignified way.
Got you. So you kind of alluded to it in the introduction. You said that you got away from anarchy. You called yourself a lapsed anarchist. And then it was an introduction, or you got invited to speak on anarchy at some kind of convention or something, which got you back into.
At the Jewish Studies Department at Michigan, where they know a lot of this kind of stuff.
And that was in the early 90s, right?
That was not later. In the early 90s. That was 10 years ago.
Oh, that was 10 years ago. Okay.
Was that the early 90s?
No.
Time flies.
Something happened in 94 in your book. I can't remember what that was, but I just
wrote the 2009.
That's what it is. That's what it was. So What was going on when, because I know at this time you started, you know, you got away from anarchy, you started putting a lot of your focus and attention on leadership management books, those types of books, and then you got back to anarchy, and then you're like, holy crap, there's so many paralleling philosophies, right? So much aligned. Get into that point of your life and when you started realizing,
well, that's what I was saying. That's what happened when I started to reread the books. I mean, that's the experience, was just going back. It wasn't like I really got away from it. It was just, I wasn't paying attention to it. And like I said, we had unwittingly or unconsciously done a lot of the things that were in there. We just hadn't called it that. And then when I started rereading it is when it sort of clicked for me that, like, shit, we're actually doing a lot of this already.
Okay.
And because I was the only one in the country weird enough to be reading Emma Goldman and reading the Harvard Business Review in parallel, then that, well, when you're looking at, this is why one of the key points of creativity is to look at multiple sources, because when you're only looking at food books, which I do a lot of, it's awesome. But if you don't look at things from other areas of study, and the creativity comes from connecting things that aren't normally connected.
Right?
And so by looking at those two in parallel, it really hit me upside the head that there was a lot of similarities.
Okay, so we're going to take our first break to thank our sponsors, and we'll be right back to start to kind of like dissect these similarities and really maybe list them out. We'll be right back.
Yes, it's true. Kick and scream all you want, but more and more guests want to text instead of speaking over the phone. Good thing there's Podium. Even if you're old-fashioned like me, this is good news. Frankly, accepting orders via text is more effective, efficient, and accurate. You can even accept payments after hours. How convenient is that? Not to mention, it's safer. No more accepting credit card numbers over the phone. Instead, do it the safe way with Podium Payments. By the way, Podium Payments is fully integratable with Apple Pay. What else is there? Do you like getting reviews? Who doesn't? With Podium Pay, send a review invite at the time it's most likely to be clicked, right after an order is completed. They even throw in 250 review invites as part of Podium's free products. Now, you might be asking yourself, what about websites? Everybody wants to order online. Podium's got you covered. Take orders from your website no matter what tools you use via Podium Web Chat. What are you waiting for? Set up a business texting line right now. No cost, no contract, no reason not to get started. Head to restaurantunstoppable.com/podium and get Podium's starter version free. That's restaurantunstoppable.com/podium.
We're back, and let's start dissecting some of these similarities. Can you just, I mean, do you have a list in front of you? Do you have them memorized? I have a list in front of me from the book that I pulled.
The point of the organization is to make the people's lives better that are working there.
Yeah.
These are not really shocking in a lot of ways. Number two, the more you involve the people that you work with in helping run the business, the better it's going to go, because nobody on this call, and I don't think anybody in the world, likes just being treated like a dummy.
Nope.
Just supposed to follow direction without any purpose or point to what they're doing. Third, everybody that you work with and everybody you know, even the ones that make us crazy, actually have a lot of wisdom that could help us to run the business better and help run the community better. Fourth thing, that when we treat people like, it says here, interchangeable machine parts, but you can pick your metaphor, which is the industrial model, they don't like it. I mean, nobody likes it, you know. And you don't like it in your personal relationships, and we don't like it at work. So if it's just like, shut up, or I'm going to get another line cook in here, I don't think that inspires people. You know, I think people want to be honored for who they are. And I would suggest that despite the, over my opinion, overuse of statistics, there's nobody like you in the world. So everybody on this call is a unique human being, and there's nobody else like y'all. And I think the more we treat the people that we hire in that way, and honor who they are, the better we get at their creativity, the better we get at their feeling like they're a part of something meaningful, and the more they want to do good work.
Yeah. And does the last, help? Yeah, absolutely. And the last thing that really resonates with me in that paragraph is this point that the point of an organization is to serve those who are a part of it. And I always say on the show that if you're opening a business, yeah, it's your obligation to exist to serve others. And I think that's where a lot of people go wrong in business. They think, I'm opening a business, I'm all paying you, you work for me, get to work.
Yeah.
I mean, which isn't new leadership philosophy by any means.
No, I think that's these are all beliefs. So I'm not saying that people who believe that are evil. I'm just saying I choose not to believe that. So It is a commonly held belief in the world that the business is created to serve the owner. Robert Greenleaf, this is the parallel. So Robert Greenleaf, who wrote Servant Leadership in 1979, who worked for AT&T, he wrote all about this. The leader's job is to serve the organization. So this is where you have progressive business and anarchism, and they're like, oh, it's the same.
Yeah. So when going through this material, the two variables that stuck out to me the most is this idea of autonomy and this idea of acceptance. People want to be accepted. People want to be recognized. People want to be valued.
Yep.
What am I missing? Is there anything that you think needs to be added to that list to like generalize?
Well, I think the point of all the stuff that you have on that PDF of the workbook are the framework for this stuff. So I think in terms of understanding anarchism, I mean, the four core beliefs that are on there, which I could just rattle through.
But please.
One is I already referenced. So the common misconception is it's chaos, and the common misconception is it's a political argument against the current political system. But it's actually not. It's just a way of life.
Yeah.
So it's not about changing government. It's not about electing somebody different, although that might help too. But it's about how I treat everybody now.
Yeah.
And how I treat myself. So understanding that it's actually the opposite of politics is an interesting shift.
I dig that. So this idea, why is it that you think people, is it because of the misconception of anarchy as being absolute chaos that people turn their nose to it? Like why don't we want to embrace everything you're sharing with us?
Because 150 years ago, it was portrayed in the same way that, you know, Muslims were after 9/11, or that Jews were in Germany, or pick your metaphor. I mean, it was just, this was the most evil thing in the world, and why that was could have had a lot to do with people wanting to hold on to power and feeling threatened, but whatever. But in 1918, I think 1919 was the Anarchist Act that they actually banned. You couldn't get into the country if you were an anarchist. So it didn't matter what else you might have done, but if that was your belief system, you were banned from the country or expelled from the country if you had been an immigrant. But
that blows my mind, because when you look at what the core of what anarchy is, it's like, why wouldn't you want a world where people are seen and recognized and have, I mean, this is the land of the free, right? I feel like it.
Well, it is in theory, but when you go back and study the history, it was never, I mean, with all due respect to the country, and we're not going to do a talk on history of racism, but that it's been pervasive since we started. But I think the key for me is less about how it got there and more how we can use it now. Because people, for whatever reasons, I mean, this is how people grew up thinking that, right? But I think for me, it's just like looking at the second thing on that list is like one of my big shifts. You know, you're asking Eric about like when I was in school, right? So a lot of, at 18, it was a lot of like, you can't make me do this, right? Which is what I would now call freedom from. But what I realized 10 years ago when I started, you know, you were asking when I reconnected with it. So when I reconnected with it, I was like, I realized it was actually about freedom too. So it's not about keeping people from making me do stuff. It's about that I own my own life and that I make choices. And everything I do is a choice. I choose to go deal with a difficult customer. I choose to stay late. I choose to work on Saturday. I choose to be kind. I choose to share money or not share money. It's all a choice. And when I realized that for myself, it was very eye-opening.
So what is the key to making that shift from a freedom from mentality to a freedom to mentality?
Well, I think for me, it was just realizing how much my language, a lot of it was my language. So this is another talk really, but the phrase I have to go to work is inaccurate.
You get to go to work.
Well, you don't have to go to work. There's consequences, but that's true of everything.
Yeah.
There's nothing we can do that's free of consequences. So if you choose to go to work because you prefer those consequences to the consequences of going out of business or being unemployed, then all I'm saying is own that choice. Like, you don't have to be nice to your significant other. There's just consequences. You don't have to pay taxes. There's just consequences. So I'm choosing to do those things. And when I realized it was my own choice and that I needed to own that choice, it was enormously freeing.
Yeah. So not to make this a political conversation, but I'm curious right now, like this, just like, No, I mean, I feel like there's a lot of unrest in the world right now, a lot of unease.
Really?
And a lot of people. I
thought it seemed like super stable and calm and.
A lot of people demanding change. A lot of people were, you know, saying that. Yeah, but at the same time, I can't help but think of this because I feel like,
yeah,
why can't, instead of demanding change, why not be the change? You know, and that's the only thing that's going through my mind right now.
That's well said, and that quote comes from Gandhi. So just to show who actually had a lot of anarchist philosophy in his work, as did Rabindranath Tagore, who was one of his key colleagues, and that's where, because of the negative images that you brought up about anarchism, it never gets framed that way. It gets discussed as Gandhi, who was nonviolent, which is also awesome. So to your point, here's what I have learned. The way we think and the beliefs that are in our brain will create whatever it is around us that we create.
Manifest destiny.
Yeah. So if we think hierarchically, we will create hierarchy. If we think on our own, we will create a solo venture where everybody else is on the outside looking in and we're always going at it with them, right? If we think so, it's interesting in the current context that you're asking about. Every other article tells you how everything's going to be different when all this is over. But I don't buy it.
Because why is that?
Because the only things that right now are going to be different is they're going to be standing 6 feet apart and wearing masks, and the people on this call, we're only going to be able to seat every other table. But beyond that, they're not thinking any differently. So all they're going to do is do the same things, but wearing a mask and sitting 6 feet apart. So in order to create a different outcome, we need to think differently, which is a lot of what this is. It's a different belief system and it's a different way of thinking. So like one of the beliefs on here is that the means that we use need to be congruent with the ends that we want to achieve. I'll say it again. The means we use, in other words, the way we do things, has to be congruent with the long-term vision that we're trying to get to. Okay. So if we want to create an organization in our long-term vision that people are engaged with, it won't work if you and I just go home and write the vision by ourselves.
You got to share it. You got to put it up.
You need to involve them in creating the vision of involvement.
Okay.
Right. Yelling at a staff member because they were unkind to a customer.
Yeah.
Is incongruent.
Yeah.
Buying cheaper ingredients that have less flavor in order to get to open a high quality restaurant isn't going to work.
Gotcha.
Right. So the point is, like, how I deal with my life today has to be congruent or in alignment with what I want to create in the long run.
Okay.
Okay. So what you see in the news, regardless of who you vote for, with all due respect, is a lot of people being very unkind, arguing over kindness.
The irony there is killer.
And it's going to fail because just like when your car is out of alignment, you can't drive very well. When your back is out of alignment, you're in perpetual pain. We're creating the same thing socially. So that's a good example of one of the beliefs that could change. Here's another one. Everybody is an amazing, interesting person who could do great things, and there's no hierarchy of human beings. Mm-hmm. So I thought Michael Jordan was awesome, but he's no better human being than somebody we just fired. The man or woman who just won the Nobel Prize is really smart, but they're probably not very good at cooking an omelet.
Yeah.
So and your worst line cook could probably make a better omelet than that person.
So listening to what you're saying and reflecting on the 700 plus interviews, what's coming through my mind right now is this idea that whenever there's an issue, whenever there's a need for a solution, to bring everybody in on it, because you don't want to limit yourself. You don't want to not have access to that potential energy, that brainstorming power, and that everybody has something special. And the other thing that comes to my mind is getting to know your people and finding out what passions and desires they have, so you can lean into those passions and desires, because you might be limiting yourself from a great strength. These are just some of the things that are coming through my mind.
Oh, absolutely. And so this is what's hard. I mean, so we've all been raised with hierarchical thinking. I mean, it's just the norm. Right.
Yeah.
The boss knows best. And so we try to do it the other way. But if we haven't really changed our thinking, it happens to all of us. We revert back to how we were raised. Right.
Yeah.
And under pressure, we all revert even more. So in the middle of a pandemic and all this tension, and we're all trying not to go out of business, it's really easy to just go like, fuck them all. They're just going to do it the way I want. I don't have time to listen to this shit. Anybody thought that?
Right.
Y'all hear me?
I'm sure nobody. I'm sure nobody's thought that.
Okay. Well, I think it too, but the problem is it doesn't really work. And so then we're just going right back to the old way that we say we don't like.
Yeah.
And so, we're not engaging people. And this isn't just a trick to trick people into thinking we care. You have to really believe that they have insight to offer.
Yeah. I know you mentioned you got to get off the call a little bit before 1 o'clock. So I want to make sure we leave plenty of time for that. But before we take one more break and go to the Q&A, the one thing I want to talk about is this. It seems like the more I learn, the more I put myself out there and I ingest this information, there seems to be a trend happening right now that we're realizing that, I think farming permaculture, you talk about that in the book, is a great example of the more we learn, the more we realize, the more we coexist with nature, the more we try to, you know, mirror what's the natural order, the better it seems to be for ourselves, for the environment, for everything involved. I think there might, there tends to be a disconnect that we, if you're human, you don't think of yourself as a natural thing, that it's actually very human to be, to find order in chaos, right? It's a very human trait. To organize and to be.
Well, I would suggest it's not. It's just how
I agree with you. I agree with you. Yeah. So the thing is, why is there this disconnect that in business, we tend to lean away from the natural order to scale, to be bigger, to do more with less.
Those are all beliefs, man. I mean, they're just the beliefs that we're hearing all the time, and so we grew up with them. I mean, I grew up in Chicago, man. I don't know if anybody's been there, but all the streets are straight.
Yeah.
Seem totally normal. Like that's what streets should be like. Like you shouldn't have to have weird curvy streets. Those are bad. But the truth is it doesn't really make, it's just two different approaches that both have merits. So why do we, because we hear it over and over and over again. Like, I mean, even, we were 10 years in business and my mother was still giving me a hard time that I didn't go to law school. We had 150 employees.
Right.
You know, so it's just, there's social norms, right? Like what we're all wearing right now, we would never have shown up for a business meeting wearing t-shirts 25 or 35 years ago. I mean, 40 years ago would have been completely unacceptable.
Yeah.
It would be considered rude.
Are there any other thoughts you have or ideas you have that have not come out? Because I want to make sure they come out before.
I got millions.
I know you do.
So this thing about hierarchy is really important. Another one is that we need to commit to the growth of the individual that we hire, right? So my commitment is to help everybody who works here to become themselves, because the more they feel, to your point, aligned with who they naturally are, the better the work's going to go. And conversely, though, I need them to commit to the whole organization. So if they're only in it for themselves, that's not going to work, because in the same way, I got to commit to the community being healthy. And I want the community to commit to us as a business being healthy. Together is where we're going to get the biggest benefit, right? Okay. Does that make sense? So Absolutely. We got to honor each individual. Another one is really understanding that sharing more information is going to help people. So to your earlier point about beliefs, so we grow up with belief, like don't bother people. They don't want to know this. I think we let them decide whether they want to know it or not, right?
Okay.
So the whole idea of open book management, which is actually the next call I got to get on at 1 o'clock, or I'm going to get on at 1 o'clock, I don't have to, is about open book management. So that's all based on beliefs that frontline people have insight into how business works. And I just spent yesterday an hour talking to a relatively new host who's going to take responsibility. Part of the challenge that we're having at the Roadhouse is because of the way we're seating now with the pandemic, it's taking a lot longer to get tables set up and stuff, right? So I want to start tracking how long from when the person checks in to when we actually get them seated. Not when there's a wait in the restaurant, but just like if they come right now and it's not busy, how long? So he's going to take ownership of that line. And I'm sitting there watching his mind. He's like thinking and start. He goes, well, we might have to do this. And I'm like, yep, you're getting it now. So he's already thinking of changes in the systems and things that need to be different on the shift report and all this. He's been here 2 months.
Yeah. So if we're listening to you and we want to make this shift to lean in towards human nature, we talk about flattening hierarchy. What are the things that the two or three elements that are most important today that if we want to start making this shift need to happen?
Well, that's the thing, is stop thinking hierarchically. So it's not what are the most two or three, but I think it's what resonates with you. I mean, the ones I'm sharing are really important. I think I would suggest that really believing that the person you employ is amazing.
Okay.
And that we just haven't necessarily gotten it out of them, but they have passions. And you'll see it, man. If you take them to their church and they sing in the choir, or you see them with their kid, or you find out that they paint at home, or, you know, there's something that they're really engaged with, and we just haven't tapped into it. So when you start to realize that everybody has that potential, things change.
No, I love this. I mean, I'm constantly saying business is all about relationships. And if you want to have better relationships, you got to understand people better. You need to learn about people and how they tick and why they tick. And the more you learn about people and understand human nature, I feel like the more you can leverage these skills, this knowledge to serve your business and the people in your business.
Yeah, well, and not just that, but I think, yes, getting to know them, but also the belief that they can become great. Mm. And our job is to help them get to greatness, because if all the people who work here are getting to greatness, I'm killing it.
I love it, man. I love it when you reinforce the things I like to say in the show is your job is to push people out of your business by empowering them and giving them everything they need to not need
you. Want.
And so ideally, they don't want to leave. But
yes, agreed. So that's one. The free choice thing is huge. Like, who can remember on this call their parents telling them they have to do something?
I mean,
that's a real question. Okay. How did you feel? You could talk. How did you feel when your parents told you had to cut the lawn or make your bed or do your homework?
Reluctance.
Okay. And what was your energy?
Not good.
Okay. Every employee that you have right now says, I have to go to work. Now, they might be slightly more mature about it than when they were 9, but I'm telling you, they're bringing the exact same energy to work that they brought when their parent told them they had to cut the lawn.
So is the shift just having this conversation, telling people that they have the choice, you can leave today?
Yeah, they won't even believe you at first.
I love it, man.
But there's a quote in part 3 from Edward Carpenter, who was an interesting English anarchist in the late 19th century, and he said, going through one's life as if one has no choices is like being a slave. Because it's true. I mean,
And I mean,
this isn't only frontline people, man. I mean, I remember vividly, this guy was the fucking CEO of this big company. He's like, I'm a slave to my schedule. I'm like, no, you're not. Fuck it. Like, you don't have to do what the schedule says.
You know,
own your choices, man. Be kind because you want to be kind and you choose to be kind.
Awesome stuff.
So I think that's huge. And then coming up with systemic ways to involve people. So bottom line change, open book management, collective visioning, all of that. So those are 3.
I love it, man. This has been great. We got to take one more quick break to thank our sponsors, and we're going to be back to do some Q&A.
Thank you, sponsors.
Yes. Head over to toasttab.com/unstoppable to find out why Toast POS is the number one recommended POS on the show by a landslide. So there's a bunch of reasons why Toast is being recommended on the show, but I'm finding the most common reason is because of their customer support. And now, while I don't think you'll need their customer support all the time, when that Friday night rolls around and there is a question you have and you're busy, you're going to wish you were able to get right into that customer support and they will be there for you. The other reason why Toast is always being recommended on the show is because of how many other platforms integrate with Toast. So you can literally marry all the technologies in your company together. They'll work together. They integrate together and you can turn on these additional features as you need them. It's like flipping a switch. It's that easy. So that's why I love Toast. That's why my guests love Toast. And again, if you want to learn more, head over to toasttab.com/unstoppable. And when you use that link, I'll send you a check for $1,000 when you become a customer. All right, we're back and we're going to do some Q&A with the folks that joined us today. Jason, you're first up, man. Reflecting on this conversation, what's going through your mind right now?
Well, I think that Ari and I have a very similar kind of life philosophy in the way that everybody's personal experiences in life, their own perception, is always going to shape the way that they make decisions. And I love the way that he talks about treating your employees, right? I mean, you don't have to do anything, but you have to accept the consequences of the choices that you make. So I think that's a really nice way to kind of teach your team. You know, I think it makes them feel like they're more part of something. Their choice matters. And that's my thought.
Ari, do you want to compound on that?
Love it. Thanks, dude.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, we actually have a hand up. I'm going to go over to Mazroor. Mazroor, you are unmuted, and I'm going to mute you, Jason. Go for it, man.
Thank you. Hi, Ari. Thank you for your talk. And I just had a question. Could you give us a couple of maybe tactical things that you do in stores? I have 5 stores.
Yep.
And just, you know, did not come from a restaurant background, but understand the importance of culture.
Yep.
We've created things like core values, things like that, but I struggle with taking those core values and implementing in the store. So just any tactical advice that you'd have would be appreciated.
Well, I mean, everything's a little wacky right now with the pandemic, but one thing which I wrote an essay about in part 4 of the book, this is my very beat up copy, is about the new staff orientation, which I actually want to restart because we've let all of that stuff lapse with all the COVID stuff. But like, because when you do the new staff orientation and you teach it yourself and you talk about what those mean to you and you share examples of how you learned from them, where you've screwed up, how you've changed your beliefs over time, and it's coming from the heart, and you ask them to what they think about it and then shut up long enough, which is hard for us to do as leaders, to actually hear what they think, like, you will hear interesting things. And you can't really lose, because if they hate it, then they're not going to work out, right? More likely, they're going to love it. More likely, they've never worked anywhere where the owner or the boss actually had a meaningful conversation with them about values and what it meant in their own life, and ask them for stories of how they relate that to their child, or how they relate to their own childhood, or how they learned it in a previous job. And like, you'll end up, I believe in my experience, almost always with the interesting conversation. And usually I'm surprised, because some of the people with the most interesting insights are the ones who seem the least engaged. But then when you really get them talking, there's like a amazing insight waiting to come out. So that's one. And then other things that we do, like, there's more in the books, but the visioning process, open book management, our bottom line change process, which is a systemic way to involve people in designing the change you're going to make, rather than the hierarchical model we all were raised with, where you and I go home, argue it out, and then come back and tell them all what they're going to do. This is where we get them involved in the conversation. Even if we're making the final decision, we're still getting their input before the decision gets finalized. And then we're involving them in it from the beginning.
So are you referring to like employees from, you know, from all levels across the organization?
Yes.
And how do you make that time, or how do you structure that collaboration?
You make the time. I mean, I wrote an essay on time management, but it's in part 3, but it's the same way we make time to
block it,
to work out. Like, I run every day. Yeah. I don't know. I just do it, man.
Yeah.
At the Roadhouse, we say JFD, just fucking do it.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Harry.
Thank you, Mazroor. And I'm curious, I see your hand up, Greg. I just want to compound off this idea of, do you feel anarchy can exist well in a franchise model? Is it harder to achieve anarchy in a franchise model?
I'm not in one, so I think it would be presumptuous for me to really say. I don't know what the restrictions of it are. I think it's well suited to smaller settings where you have more reach, but it's not an either or. So it's not like one day you're, you know, on Mac and the next day you're on IBM.
Yeah, I hear you.
It's small behaviors. So you could start by just challenging yourself to like, what do I believe about the employees?
Mm-hmm.
And then go employee by employee. And if you have negative beliefs about them, or you believe they're incompetent, and I've had those beliefs about people, that's on me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, that's another conversation, but those beliefs are being manifested through our energy. They're picking up on it. We're essentially, even though we're saying nice words, we're treating them energetically like they're a lower kind of human. They feel demeaned, even though they don't say it, even though they may not even know it. And they act like unempowered, helpless people who are waiting for you and me to fix everything. Then we get mad at them because they act unempowered. So I'm just going to say, it starts with us and how we treat them.
Absolutely. If you don't believe in what you're preaching, how do you expect anybody else to follow suit?
They won't.
Yeah. I love it. Greg, I'm coming to you, man. I'm going to lower your hand and go for it. You have it.
All right. Hey, Ari. It's Greg Lindsay here, man. Alexandria, Virginia. Doing well. How are you?
Good.
With the Jewish Deli here in Alexandria.
Yeah, Virginia. I remember. So, I looked it up after you were there.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. So, obviously, you know, you talked a lot about, you know, involving your people and how you treat and look at and work with your employees. So we're actually in the midst of, in the next couple of weeks, hiring our first employees. So, yeah. You know, this might be a bit of a general question, but, you know, what would be a couple action items that you would tell me over the next leading up to hiring these first members of the team that I should be doing to make sure that I'm really starting this whole, you know, having employees process off the right way?
Well, I don't know if you've written a vision for the business, but if you haven't, I would get one going quickly, because really in an hour you can write a pretty good vision as a draft. And if you wanted to be really radical, how many people are you going to hire?
Three.
Awesome. Bring it to them on the first day.
Yes.
Go, here's a draft of my vision. I'm not done with it yet. What do y'all think? And then, because they'll just stare at you, it's better if you structure it. What do you like most? what's causing you anxiety, and what's missing?
So that's a great example of the bottom line change, right? That you told us.
Yeah, that's part of bottom line change. So if you did that on day one, I guarantee you, dude, they have never worked anywhere. On their first day, the boss goes, here's a draft vision. I'd really need your help. What do you think we should change? I need to finish it, but I want your input before I do.
I love it.
Like, what's the worst that could happen to give you a bad idea? It wouldn't be the first one you heard or the first one you had.
And we remember from Greg, he joined us during your first workshop on visioning. He was the one that had he struggles getting the thoughts out. I would even go as far as saying, go to your team to help to have them help you get the words out. Maybe the words flow smoother through their fingers than your own.
Yeah. And then Greg, the new staff orientation is great. It's much easier if you start that way. The essay's in part four of the book, or we got it as a pamphlet too. But I think if you just, you don't need to do it exactly how we do it, but I mean, if you just follow through that and you teach that, as awkward as it will feel on the first time, you will be light years ahead. Because the other one is just like, sort of pick your metaphor, like, dude, you've played football before, right? Okay, get out there and do a good job. But like, they don't know the game plan. They don't know the plays. They don't know your coaching style. They don't know what the calls are. They need to know how you want to do it, or else they're just going to do it the way they were doing. And if they were all on three different high school teams, you could get three completely convoluted ways of doing it. And it's not like one's better or worse. They're just doing it totally incompatibly.
Yeah. So we got about 4 minutes left. We have two hands up. I want to see if we can't get them both in. I'm going to go to you first, Jill. Jason, you already had a voice. I want to make sure everyone gets heard. So, all right, you are unmuted, Jill. Go for it.
Hey, how y'all doing? Thanks, Ari. I absolutely adore this book. And I wanted to comment where you asked, I think, a brilliant question of does this apply to franchises as well? Because certainly within a structure of a corporation or franchise, there are certain things that cannot be as flexible because it's a part of a repetitive, consistent model, right? But so I actually come from a franchise background. My parents and grandparents opened McDonald's number 150 in the first 5 years of the corporation. And so I was actually able to witness growing up in that, and now speaking to a lot of past employees from my parents, asking them all about what was their experience like and their training and their education. And I can tell you that there is a way to apply all of what Ari's saying to a franchise model, because at the end of the day, the people that are working for you are still people, and they still have their own desires, and they still have their own goals, and they need to be happy if they're going to be productive. And I would hear stories, unfortunately, my dad passed away almost 26 years ago, but I hear stories now from these people who started with him as a teenager and was with him for decades, basically until he passed away and my mom sold the businesses. But they would say to me, your dad, when he came into the store, would always roll up his sleeves. He would get side by side with us. He'd sit me down and say, what can I do to make your job better? What can I do to make this situation better? What do you need from me to run more smoothly? And so just sitting down as the business owner with your people and asking those questions, even people who are just crew members who I've had conversation with who weren't management said to me the same kind of feeling, like your dad always jumped in with us and he looked at everyone the same way. And so I forget who asked the question, do you do that at every level? I believe strongly that to get the true perspective, not what you think is going on in your business, but really understand that it's key to ask everyone from the dishwasher to your top level manager. And you really will get all sorts of lenses to then really blend together for that perfect view on what's really happening in your business. And I think it can be done at any yep. type of business, from an independent restaurant to a franchise.
Ari, do you want to reflect on that?
I agree. I mean, yeah. I'm just trying not to presume, because Jill grew up in that, you know, with her parents in that setting. I haven't worked in it, but I agree. And this works at home too, man.
I think it can apply.
Get your kids to own their choices. Like,
I'm skeptical if it cuts as deep. I mean, that's a conversation for another day. I want to make sure
you don't know until you try.
Right? Yeah, exactly. I'm skeptical though.
Okay, one more quick question,
Jason. Go for it.
Then I got to jump.
I'm gonna unmute you.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yep.
Sweet. So my question was going to be really similar to Greg's. We're right in the same boat, just starting out and undergoing, going through the hiring process right now. And when it comes to making that vision, I like the idea of incorporating and kind of including them. But is there any resource, or maybe anybody else on this call, maybe some standardized process that we might be able to learn? Somebody has a spreadsheet or something of how to go about that? Because
you go on zingtrain.com after Eric gives you the discount code, and it's all the shit I write about. So part one has a lot of stuff on visioning. There's a pamphlet that's not in the books called Bottom Line Change, which Eric just referenced a minute ago, and that's our change process. So those two things definitely would help you. And then in the back of part one is our 2020 vision, so you could look at that. And then we're just finished our 2032. So if you email me at cesari@zingermans.com, I'll send that back to you too.
Yeah, and I want to say, I think the promotional code we're using is don't stop. So if you go to Zingermans and you purchase anything, there should be a space for you to enter a promotional code. I think it's a 20% discount on anything Zingtrain.
Code, books, don't stop. Whatever. Yep. There's training, and Jason, there's training seminars on the visioning and all that too.
Yep. Ari, it's 1 minute before 1 o'clock. I know you have a 1 o'clock commitment.
Well, they're running late. They're texting me. So you can okay, squeeze awesome. In two more questions for you.
So we, I think, Jill, we already got to you. Jason, we got to you. Does anybody have any final thoughts or ideas for Ari before we say goodbye?
Did this help you at all, or did I just freak you out?
I find it super helpful. I mean, it's hard to...
Oh, not you. Oh, yeah. Them.
Okay.
It was great and very informative. Thank you.
Thank you, Jill.
Yeah,
I
wanted to add something too.
Please.
In my experience, I've been 5 years with my restaurant and Mexican food. And even though that, you know, I started like a couple of years ago, it's always good to refresh everything that we're listening right now from Ari, because I'm going through the same problems right now. It's like sometimes you're just under so much stress and you don't know how to motivate, and you know you enter in this whole process. So I really like about what you were telling us about going with them through all the core values and reinforce them and, you know, making it part of it. I think it's super important. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you. Where's your restaurant?
It's in Walter Manors, Fort Lauderdale. It's called La Mexicana Taco Bar.
Okay. If I get there, I'm going to come see you.
Anytime.
Awesome. Well, Ari's not on the schedule to come back anytime in the immediate future, but you know you're always welcome here, Ari. Thank you so much for giving us.
Thank you, guys.
over 2 hours of your time now. We are super grateful for you, and you better believe I will continue to promote the Lapse Anarchist series of knowledge. Because
you're unstoppable.
Well, man, you helped me get there, man. You're a huge inspiration. I've been looking up to you from day one of starting this podcast. So thank you for being that inspiration.
Thank you all. So again, my email is just ra@zingermans.com. If you got questions, send it on. Greg already emailed me last time, and thank y'all.
And I can't
good
say
luck with the opening, you guys.
Yeah, and I can't say goodbye without saying there is no questioning, Ari. You are unstoppable. Thank you so much, dude.
Thank you. Have a great day, everybody.
All right, there we go. Another episode wrapped up here at Restaurant Unstoppable. Thank you again to our guest, Ari Weinswag, for being so generous with his time and knowledge over and over and over again. You're always welcome back, Ari, that's for sure. So I hope you guys found value in today's chat, this idea of anarchy in business. And when I say anarchy, what comes to my mind after learning more about anarchy and the history of anarchy is human nature. It's looking at chaos. And I feel like chaos is another one of those words that are associated with negativity, bad, like we need order. But I think the world also needs chaos. And let's be honest. Humans are very chaotic. Like, you never know what's going to happen. We're unpredictable creatures. And I think it's okay to embrace that unpredictability. I think it's okay to embrace everyone's diversity and uniqueness, and to keep your mind open to the possibilities of what's right in front of you. These people that are right in front of you, what they bring to the table. And we sell ourselves short. I think we should explore the people in our businesses as much as possible, how their uniquenesses, their quirkinesses, like all these things as much as possible, because there's this gold hidden in that. And the people want to belong. They want to feel like they're contributing. They want to feel like they're being a part of something greater. And you don't necessarily get that in rigid environments. So I don't know, lots to explore here. I really enjoyed today's chat, and these episodes are being recorded live, guys. You can join the conversation. If you want to know what's coming down the pipeline, I highly recommend you join my email list. If you head over to restaurantunstoppable.com, you scroll down to the bottom, you can get on the list right there. Any page at Restaurant Unstoppable, I'm pretty sure. If you head over to restaurantunstoppable.com/747 for today's episode, there'll be a way to sign up on the email list right there for you. And I let you guys know what's coming. I give you a heads up every week of who's coming on the show. You can also, not only are you able to connect with my workshop leaders, but you're also able to connect with many of my restaurateur guests, because what we do is something called Shop Talk within the network, where you can ask your questions on that person's episode. So if you want to be a part of the conversation, if you want to be a part of the change, head over to restaurantunstoppablenetwork.com. Or if you go to the show notes, actually, if you're on your phone right now, all you got to do is scroll down a little bit, and we'll have a link right in the show notes for you to join the network right there. You'll get a 30-day trial if you use that link in the show notes. And thank you in advance. And I can't wait to meet you. I can't wait to have you be a part of the conversation. And yeah, awesome stuff. All right, that's it for today. Please support the show, guys. Leave those 5-star reviews on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Share this with anybody and everyone you know. That's the best way to support this show. Let other people know about what we're trying to do here to inspire, empower, and transform the industry. And thank you in advance. Until next time, peace out.